Hello, Net Podcast Experience listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Net Podcast Experience. Today we have Michael Richard. He was originally from England. He's a software developer, and he's moved to Vegas. But that's enough for me. I want Michael to introduce himself.
Hi, Kevin. Yes, as you said, I'm Michael Richard. I'm originally from England, but I left England for the first time when I was 20. And since then, I've lived in five other countries, including the U.S., where I've spent 32 years. And within the U.S., I've lived in 8 or 9 different states, and I'm actually living in Las Vegas now, which is the fourth time that I've lived in Vegas.
Very interesting, man. Definitely been around. Let's start off the bat. How you got a little bit into the software game? You said you've been in this since 1987, almost 33 years now. Tell me what it was like getting started into it.
Well, it's a kind of a strange story. I was in the U.S., and in 1987, my father died, so I went back to England to help my mother settle the estate and deal with the loss. And I was looking for some work, and I was quite expert in Microsoft Excel, which is one of the programs I hate with a passion, and Microsoft Word. And while I was there, I was looking for some work, and a friend of mine said that he needed some help building a database for his business, which was they were designing and marketing a brand of tennis rackets. And I jumped in with both feet and said, yeah, I can help you with that, having never worked with databases. And I started with a program called Omnis 3, which was just incredibly complicated and had me tearing my hair out. And then one day, somebody I knew introduced me to this program called FileMaker, and it was like love at first sight. I just saw it, and it was just, to me, it was the perfect tool for me to do what I needed to do. And so I jumped in both feet and spent the next 4 months really working hard and building this order processing system for my friend. And at the end of the 4 months, I decided that this was what I was going to do for the rest of my life and just work in FileMaker. And I told everybody I knew that this is what I was going to do. And without any exceptions, everybody said I was either completely nuts or that nobody would pay me to develop with this tool, which was fairly crude at the time, and that I'd be bankrupt in 6 months. Well, 33 years later, I'm still doing it. So, and none of them will admit what they told me at that time.
Well, that is a fascinating story, man. Just to think that the doubters, right? It's almost, we'll talk a little bit about the doubters, especially in the world of technology a little bit later. But through those 33 years, as you said, what's the biggest thing you've noticed from year one when you started to now and through in between that you can give the biggest lesson to anyone trying to be a software engineer and develop open sources?
Well, being a software developer is very different from being a programmer. And people look at me with some hesitation when I say that. But the difference is that if you put it into the terms of construction, for example, a programmer is a specialist. He's an electrician. He's a plumber. He's a carpenter. The developer is more like, he's the architect, he's the general contractor, he's the subcontractor, and a lot of the times he's also does the electrical and the plumbing and everything else. So the developer goes far beyond what the programmer does, because we're looking at the big picture. From the time the client says, this is what I want you to build, we have to think through all the permutations and know how to get there with the least amount of effort.
Interesting. It's a very interesting world of program versus software development. We have a lot of misconstruments, especially in today's world of when people decide to be a programmer, let's say for like program video games compared to, like you said, a software developer for other applications, for sure.
Right. Different skill sets. I mean, the people who do video games, I couldn't even begin to understand what they do.
Right. Right. It's like day and night, right? You don't have a one read. It's almost like learning two different languages, as it seems.
It is.
Sure.
Very, very, very similar.
So you've always had this vision for, I believe it's Nautilus FM. Tell me a little bit about that and how that name came about.
It wasn't really a vision until about 2 or 3 years ago. And I've always, in what I do in developing business solutions for a wide variety of businesses, and I've developed solutions for almost every business you can think of, I've always worked and focused on the user interface to try and give the user a wow factor. And a lot of programmers and developers don't consider that the user has to be excited about what they're being given to use, otherwise they'll fight it and resist it. So interface design has always been a focus and a love of mine, and it gives me great pleasure to do that. And a couple of years ago, I was just sitting thinking, and the idea, I wonder if it's possible to build a program using FileMaker, which is my tool, that everything happens on a single screen. You go nowhere. The user goes absolutely nowhere. And the reason behind that thought was, if you never leave home, how can you ever get lost? And I've seen so many cases where programs come on and they get the user opening windows all over the place and different panels and different screens. And within a few minutes, they just don't know what they're doing or where they are. And they can't maintain continuity and context while they're working, because if the phone rings, they're distracted and now they've forgotten what they were doing and where they were doing it. So it was a big problem. So that was the genesis. And I then spent about a year, maybe a little bit longer than that, just trying to get this to work in a seamless and effortless way. And it was a lot of fits and starts. It was a lot of things, yeah, that doesn't work, so you had to go back to the drawing board. But it's now fully developed. It's fully refined. And I've released it under an open source license so that anybody in the community, professionals or amateurs, whoever, can just take this solution or this. It's more like a framework. It's not a solution itself. It's just a methodology. It's a way of doing things. They can take this and run with it and use it for whatever they want to build.
Very interesting. You mentioned UX and UI. Is there a difference between UX and UI compared to what you're doing versus, let's say, a programmer? Or is there something about the UX and UI, as you said, is more of a framework rather than a solution?
Well, there isn't really, in my opinion, any difference between UX and UI. They are interchangeable. Now, some people might disagree with that, but the interface is what the user sees. Mm-hmm. And it's like the tip of an iceberg, Kevin. The user only sees the third that's above the surface. They don't see all the stuff that's underneath the surface that's doing all the work. They just see what they need to see. And so that's the sort of analogy that really describes the process. But the interface doesn't work without the two-thirds that's under the surface. The two are indistinguishable, except that the user only sees the top part.
Very interesting. That is crazy, just the way that you explain that. A lot of people, like I said, they could decipher it as, you know, two different things, but if you look at it, you can still use both concepts and play it out, for sure.
Right.
So looking about just through that process, before you actually got to get going to the community, what were some things you had to do, let's say the biggest lesson you learned developing? Was there anything that stood out that you can pass along to our audience for anyone trying to build up their open source networks and something like this?
Well, this is my first foray into the open source world. And having developed Nautilus FM to a point where it was bulletproof, and I'm using for all of the programs that I developed, and I've now used it for 9 different solutions, I wanted to get it out there and make it available to the community at large, because there's a lot of neat advanced tips and tricks in it. There's some very advanced techniques, but it's not revolutionary, it's evolutionary. And that's a big difference. Anybody who is at my level or somewhere close to my level will understand the framework and how it works almost instantly. People who are starting out and have had some experience but are not very knowledgeable will take a little bit of time to understand it. And I've built this example file that illustrates it and shows them exactly how to do it. But I realized that there was just no way I could share this with the community in a way that would get people to embrace it, other than to release it as a piece of open source software and just literally give it away and then help people get to terms with it and provide support and training and all of that. And to do that, I've also written a 200-page ebook that goes along with the program.
That is a lot of open source knowledge, in the sense that you've given the tools for other creators and other people who are trying to get into the space and give them the framework. Is there anything from that book that you can say to our audience that's a chapter that I'd read if anyone's trying to get into it, or something that stands out when you wrote it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In the database world, there's a concept called context, and you need to be in context, because if you think of it this way, if you don't know where you are, how do you get to where you want to go? I mean, if I said to you, you need to get to Los Angeles, but I'm going to drop you in the middle of the Sahara Desert, and you have no idea which direction you are, you're never going to be able to get to Los Angeles. So you need a starting point. And what Nautilus FM does is provide that starting point that you are always aware of, and you're always right there, but you can get to any destination literally with a single click.
That is a great point.
And it's all happening on one screen. That's the real takeaway from this. Just one screen, because it comes back down to what I said earlier. If you never leave home, you can't ever get lost.
Right. Now, is that by design? Being streamlined, the one screen creates less distractions, or is there something else behind the reasoning for one screen, or as you said before?
It's primarily that. There are no distractions. Everything happens on that one screen. When you need to look at some different data, it'll appear so that you can review it, and then when you're done with it, you close it, and you're still back where you were. So that was the sort of the primary objective that I was trying to achieve, and which I've now done.
Very interesting, man. It's crazy just to think that people don't see information as helpful in the beginning, but when you look at, just using that quote you said earlier, you got to always find a way home. And if you just drop yourself off in this area trying to get to Los Angeles, it can make a difference, you know. So I definitely understand what you're saying there. Now, transitioning a little bit into the business growth side of things, tell me a little bit about the FileMaker, or the Fireside FileMaker, or Tone Twister podcast.
Well, Fireside FileMaker is a podcast that I do with a colleague of mine, John Mark Osborne, who's been in the business almost as long as I have, and he's one of the most knowledgeable people in it. And he and I met originally because we'd never spoken before, but we knew who each other were. And I reached out to him and asked him if he would take a look at Nautilus FM and give me his professional opinion. Mm-hmm. And he liked it a lot, and we had a really interesting conversation. And at the end of it, I was thinking about it, and I called him back and I says, John, that was the most fascinating conversation. Would you be interested in doing a podcast and talking about everything FileMaker? And he went, yeah, absolutely. So we've been doing this now for 6 months. We've released 21 episodes, and we've got well over 13,000 downloads already, and which is pretty good for a fairly specialized subject.
No, that's really good. That is for a niche subject like that, to get that many eyes on it, it shows that the world is not only, as you like to say, evolutionizing, but the listeners are evolutionizing in what you're having to say and giving back to the people and sharing with them, for sure.
Absolutely. And the thing I like about both the podcast and Nautilus FM is we're getting to share advanced ideas and concepts and give two opposing points of view, because John and I are not in agreement on how we do things. We do things completely differently, but ultimately it comes down to the end result is the same. We're just taking a slightly different approach to getting there.
Yeah, that is true. Certain people have different techniques and, as I like to say, different horses for different courses to maneuver through the path. Is there anything that you learned from him that you apply and vice versa?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's big things, because the big things we've all learned, but it's the small, subtle things of, wow, I never thought of that. And, you know, even after doing this for 33 years, I'm still learning something new at least once a week and more likely once a day. Just a new, simple, new method of doing something, a new approach. And I think that's what's kept it fascinating for me. And, of course, FileMaker as a tool has been growing in its power and performance exponentially, and it's now one of the most powerful pieces of software you can possibly use for a business.
Wow. Yeah, and I think, is it on the App Store, if I'm not mistaken, FileMaker?
No, it's not on the App Store. Well, I say it's not on the App Store. They have a version called FileMaker Go, which is on the App Store. And that's for iPads and iPhones. But that's not the development environment. That the client, the FileMaker Pro Advanced, you have to either buy from Claris International, or you can get a volume license, and you get 5 licenses, and you pay an annual fee for that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because some people might think they might go to FileMaker Go, where you really got to make them. So is a subscription service almost kind of like model? What's the business model behind the FileMaker?
Well, the business model is a subscription service, and it's been evolving into that. And I'm not sure that they're at the point where it's completely finalized, but it's certainly looking to having people pay an annual fee, which works out to, for 5 users, 5 licenses, it works out to $15 per month per user, or $180 a year per user. And that might seem a lot, but it's really not, because what FileMaker does that no other solution out there is allow people like me to build a solution that would take months or even years in a industrial program like SQL or Oracle. We can do it in days or weeks. So the speed of development is incredibly fast, which means that we can deliver and deploy the solution sooner, and it costs less to get there. So it's, yes, you're paying for the licenses, but you're also saving a lot of money in development times. And so it's like swings and roundabouts, but overall it's an incredible value.
No, absolutely. I think it sounds like with the amount of work and time you put in, it's worth the price of admission, as I like to say, because the fact that the world is changing and evolutionizing into saving time, right? We hear it all, saving time, saving a customer or a client time, whatever the case may be. If you could help move and innovate, it'll go further. Now, cloud computing is this something different than cloud computing for anyone trying to decipher this on the show? Is this something different than cloud computing? If someone has that question, say, well, is this like a Salesforce type thing? Is it different than that because of the way you've explained it, or do you feel there can be some interchangeable parts between cloud computing and software FileMaker?
It's a good question, and It is the same, and yet it's not the same. And let me explain the difference.
Okay.
Salesforce is a cloud-based subscription service, and I'm not sure what it runs off. It probably was developed in Oracle. And you pay a subscription fee per month for every single user, but you use their framework. You don't, you know, it is what it is. It does this and it does that, but it doesn't do this and it doesn't do that. In other words, it's not designed or intended for the specific needs of a specific business. It's a generic general solution. And it has to be because they're trying to provide a solution for a broad swathe of the market. Now, FileMaker, on the other hand, is a tool that you have to build a solution out. You can buy solutions that are pre-designed and pre-built by people like me. But basically, you're taking a piece of software and you're building an application that is precisely what the customer needs and what they want. It doesn't cover all the things that that customer doesn't need. It doesn't force them to operate in the manner that Salesforce will make you do or a lot of other cloud solutions. So you've got complete flexibility in, and it allows me and people like me to build solutions that mimic and mimic the workflow. In other words, okay, I understand how you do things. Let me show you, let's do that in FileMaker, but let's do those things better and more efficiently. And that means less keystrokes, less typing, much automation. So it's just a very simple, streamlined process, but it does have to be built from scratch. So that's the advantage of FileMaker over something like Salesforce, which is a huge monolithic solution where you've got hundreds of thousands of companies all connecting to that big solution. Whereas with FileMaker, typically you've got a small company or you've got departments within a larger company that need something to do to solve their problem. But their IT department doesn't want to do it because they don't have time. So people end up in organizations building solutions for their specific needs. And that's where FileMaker is an incredibly powerful tool.
You know, I think flexibility is probably the key word we hit on in this little quick difference. Is I think flexibility in anything you do, especially in the world of software and the world of technology in general, you have to give clients not only options, but you have to give the developer too the flexibility. And through the flexibility, what are some things, because of the flexible market, for you to create and develop? Does that help your creativity and make you push the limits more and be more aggressive on some of the, let's say, parts or coding?
Well, yes, it really is a tool that allows you to think outside the box and solve problems in an elegant and simple way. So there is that flexibility, definitely, and that helps people like me who are out-of-the-box thinkers to come up with great ways to do things. But it also works for the end users, because every business should be constantly evolving. And what they're doing now may not be what they're going to be doing in a year. And what FileMaker allows us to do is to adapt the existing solution to new requirements without having to go back and start from scratch. And that's a huge plus as well.
Right, right. I think a lot of people don't want to, and that's the hardest part of anything, to start. They don't want to go back from scratch if they don't have to. They'd rather have some principles or baseline of where they can go with the software and move forward with it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And the other point to that is that I can tell you that very few businesses really know exactly what they want until we start building it. So
right.
they've got a broad idea, but they don't know the specifics because they don't understand and know what's possible. And once you've outlined the requirements, the refinement and how that ends up being built happens on a daily basis. It's like, okay, well, now, I didn't know you could do that, but if you can do that, why can't you do this? And, oh, I forgot to tell you. So the flexibility really comes into that is because you haven't got to dot every I and cross every T before you start work.
Well, you make a very good point. Actually, I think that's a good segue into this quote you had. You said, you wish more people believed that businesses often succeed in spite of themselves. Tell me the background where you heard that or where you got that to bring that up.
Well, I've worked with, I've lost count of how many different businesses, but what I've experienced and noticed is that a lot of businesses use either the wrong technology or they use fragmented technology. And I need to explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Let's talk about wrong technology. Tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of businesses around the world run their businesses on spreadsheets. It is absolutely the worst possible way to run a business because they're independent documents that have to be filed independently. They don't talk to one another. There are no normalization rules, so you just type whatever you want, and then you hope to make sense of it. But so let me give you an example. Let's say that you're a business and you send out your invoices on spreadsheets. That means that every single invoice is a separate spreadsheet that has to be filed in a complex hierarchical filing system. So you've got folders for different customers, and within that folder, you've got folders for different years, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of typing, and spreadsheets, quite honestly, the output looks really clunky and ugly and unprofessional. Now, if I was to say to your company, you have it doing this, mm-hmm. Okay, who are your top five customers? You would know that as a smart business guy, you would know who your top five customers are. But if I said to you, okay, I understand that. So tell me what percentage of each, what revenue has each of those companies given you? What is the percentage of your total revenue? What products are they buying and when they're buying and all that? You'd look at me like, I can't give you that information. I'd have to go through hundreds of spreadsheets to try and compile that. Whereas if you put that in a database, if you're using a database like FileMaker, that information is literally accessible instantly. You can get that information in a heartbeat. And you can use the data within that system to make really powerful decisions about what your business is doing and what you as a business owner should be doing. And in some cases, that means you're in the wrong business. You know, you're selling a range of products that nobody buys. Why are you selling them? Why are you wasting time and resources selling them? Move into something else. Do what the data tells you. So this comes back down to a different segue here. The data that businesses capture, whether it's in a spreadsheet or in a database system, is often ignored. But that data, which costs an enormous amount of money to collect, is the most valuable asset that that business has if they only look at it with an analytical eye. And that's a fundamental flaw with a lot of businesses because they're not making decisions based on knowledge. They're based on emotion or gut instinct. But knowledge and data is power. And I'll give you an example of that. One of the projects I did fairly early on was for a large art gallery in Las Vegas that I ended up managing for 3 years. And the software that I wrote to manage it was all done in FileMaker, of course. And there were two things that were really crucial. The gallery was huge. It was 5,500 square feet. And we had about 100 different artists. But our base rent in 1991 was $27,000 a month against 7% of our turnover. Well, that's a huge overhead. So we knew what every single square foot was costing us, and we tracked the amount of square footage that was allocated to each artist. And if within 3 months of putting that artist on display, they weren't generating three times their cost every single month, they were gone. We'd replace them with another artist. So we were getting rid of artists almost on a weekly basis, not because they weren't good. It's just they couldn't justify keeping that space. The other really interesting example was that we also recorded every single sale. We recorded the date, obviously, and the time of day. And after 3 months, I analyzed that data, and it told us categorically that the best period for sales in the gallery was Wednesday afternoon between 3:30 and 5:30. Huh. Now, we never understood why. We never, ever understood why that was. But it was a statistical probability. So what I did was that on Wednesdays, I had the people who would normally go home at 4:30 stay until 5:30, and the people who would normally come in at 4:30, I had them come in at 3:30. So, and I paid overtime for that, and I doubled the bases during that sales hour. And did it work every single week? No. But it did consistently enough that it was worth making that business decision to bolster our sales force for just that two-hour window. If we hadn't looked at the data, we would never have understood that. Or we would never have known that. We didn't understand it. We still don't, but we would never have known that.
That's incredible, man. Just to think that what you said, the smart technology versus the fragment and broken stuff, it really opens my mindset and opens others, I'm sure, to think that if you had that straight information right away, you're not only saving time when you can tell people, but you don't have to go through scrolling, you're wasting time. And then if you look at this, if you have the FileMaker, not only is it saving time, but it's that data and analytics that are powerful rather than making a business emotional appeal. Right? They always say that you don't want to mix emotions in the business. You'd rather mix the power of knowledge and data.
Right.
And I just, as you were talking, I just looked up their the Apple subsidiary FileMaker, and you guys have done some incredible things just looking at some of the list of companies that are using it. Tell me how you built those relationships with some of the places like USC, maybe not directly involved, but like USC, the college, Delta Airlines, and even Pfizer. Tell me a little about that. How'd you build that?
Well, obviously, I haven't built those relationships specifically
right.
because we work in different worlds and environments. But most, I would say probably all of the Fortune 500 companies have people using FileMaker within certain areas because it is a rapid application development tool. It's called a RAID, R-A-D-E. And that means that you can build a solution incredibly fast to solve a problem that's specific to what you're trying to do.
Right.
So, and a lot of businesses have, you know, realized that they don't need to pay an Oracle developer $250 an hour to build a solution in 6 months, that they can have somebody build it in FileMaker in 6 days.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. So it's a cost-effective solution. But I'm just going to circle back a little bit. So we talked about the wrong technology, and I mentioned fragmented technology. And this is actually as bad, if not worse, because businesses have got a piece of software to do this and a piece of software to do this, and they're using Salesforce to manage their CRM, et cetera, et cetera. So their technology is fragmented all over the place. And the problem is that that information is almost impossible to keep correct and updated, but you're having to look for a piece of information in multiple places, which is waste of time, and it's not efficient. With FileMaker, all of that data, every single part of it, is all in one solution that you've had built or you've built. So you can get to any piece of information from anywhere and every piece of information from everywhere. So when your customer moves their address, you just change it in one place and it's changed everywhere. When you've got people entering data, sales data or whatever it is, all that data is going into a central repository. And the moment it's in, it's available to everybody else. So you're not having to worry about, oh my God, did I update this or did I forget that? Or
right.
It's all there. It's all in that one little element that will give you every single thing you need to do to run your business efficiently. So here's the key takeaway for businesses. If a business is using proper technology, in other words, a solution that's been designed to do everything for them, that will make that business more efficient than any other way. And there is a universal law of business. If I or anybody makes a business more efficient, it can only become more profitable. It cannot lose money. If it's making money, it's going to make more. If it's losing money, it'll lose less. And maybe that's the time when they should be in the wrong, different business. And to give you an example of that, I've been working with a company in California for the last 8 years, and they manufacture conveyors. And it's a very complex business. They've got thousands and thousands of products and parts and components that are used to build these conveyors. And when I came on board, they were doing $100,000 a month in sales with 21 people on the payroll. Well, that's not very profitable. But worse than that, there were mistakes being made all the time, things getting sent out to the wrong people, the wrong orders. So a lot of stuff, there was a lot of overhead dealing with the mistakes. And everybody in the company was about ready to kill everybody else. It was a very unhappy place. And I built them a system. Oh, so let me backtrack a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
To build a quote, to send somebody out a quote, could take anywhere from 15 minutes to 3 hours. Because they would look at parts on a spreadsheet, they'd copy the part they wanted, and they'd put it into another spreadsheet, and they'd then copy it into a word processing document, and they'd build this complex document up that took a lot of time and work. And I built them a system over a year process, because it's a very complicated business, that literally, when the day it went live, freed up 2.5 people full time from writing quotes and building invoices to having one person do all the quotes and all converting all those quotes to orders, one person. Now, they didn't get rid of or fire the other 2.5 people. They just got them to do things that were more valuable to the business, more productive. So not only did people feel that they were actually doing a job they liked to do rather than just drudgery, but because the system was tracking everything, inventory, parts, components, orders, production, all of that, it eliminated almost all of the mistakes. I would say 98 to 99% of mistakes were gone. But do you know what really happened that was staggering? Mm-hmm. The moment this situation went live, they went from $100,000 a month in sales to $250,000 in sales, literally overnight. One simple reason: when somebody called in for a quote, the methodology that they were using to build that quote was so slick and so fast that before the customer had even hung up, the quote was in their email box. And they went, why would I deal with anybody else? These people know what they're doing. They're efficient. Mm. Simple as that.
Wow. That they made a very almost perfect first impression in a sense, right? That's incredible. And you know, everyone talks about logistics in business being transportation, being these other type of things. But if you think about it, logistics really isn't the technology and the people, right? You can save manpower time, like you said, one instead of two or three people trying to work at one thing. You're not only saving them, but you can now have them work on stuff that requires something to work and just be one person. It's not only saving time, but it's streamlined the process to the point where it frees up the manager or the CEO, whoever's running that regional manager, whatever business you're trying to run that time. And when you do that, you get your clients are happier. The people are like, well, let's leave a good review, right? You gave me that first good impression. So it really is a fascinating concept of how this one thing has streamlined the processes for the best of the best, the Fortune 500s, for sure.
Right. So it's really about, if you make a business more efficient, as I said earlier, it will make more money. But if you make the business more efficient, it also frees up the people there to be more productive and to enjoy what they do more. And that in turn will make the business more money because the people are happier and there'll be less turnover, less training, less mistakes, less aggravation. And, you know, I tell people, look, if you can eliminate somebody 4 hours out of somebody's work week, get them to do something in that 4 hours that they're really good at and they really like. You know, Mary, you're really good at marketing. Spend 4 hours on Monday doing marketing. Forget the filing. We don't do that anymore. So you increase job satisfaction. Now, that company, the conveyor company, they've still got exactly the same number of staff so many years later. But now they're doing, you know, close to, let me think, close to $4 million a year in sales as opposed to 1.2.
Wow. Yeah, they've time-forced their growth. Yeah, they export it. Wow, it's great. Or export. Yeah, it's nuts how you can just look at that in the sense that you can free up not only people's time, right, but you can also focus on company culture. Because the more you can give people the time and attention to do the stuff they enjoy, like you said, marketing with Mary or Ken likes, you know, just talking and working on personal growth and having sessions at a meeting. Just the more you can do that and have those guys plan out, the turnover rate will be very low. And when you help these guys at this conveyor company, would you say, not only did they thank you, but would you say that the overall morale and the spirit of the team started to perk up as you started to see results?
Oh, it's dramatic. I mean, everybody gets on like a big family now, and it's a great company, and I'm always working with them, and we're still adding features and functionality and tweaking and little tiny things. But the people are happier in their job because they know that the program is taking care of all the stuff they had to keep track of manually, and even to the point of the owner knowing now that he doesn't have to buy a year's supply of this widget or this component because he can see on a daily basis that he's going to need to order in the next 3 weeks to keep up with the demand. But they're saving enormous amounts of money in not purchasing inventory that they don't need.
Hey, right. It really does give a new perspective. As you said, it saves the efficiency and it saves the people's, you know, burnout, just saves the people from getting run down and mundane, the same task. It really opens the gates. It makes you think outside the box. And it's all there in one streamlined facet, which is great. Let's go back to a little bit. You had I'm not sure if you had the opportunity to actually meet the man himself, Steve Jobs, but looking at these 33 years.
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah. But is there anything you have learned from his story because you were in the days of the 80s and early 90s when he started to build Apple? Is there anything you could have took away and learned from him? Let's say his story that you apply to your fundamentals.
Strive for perfection. Always strive for perfection. And design is the most important part of any solution, whether it's a product or it's a piece of software. The design is so crucial. And, you know, I just bought a little video kit for my iPhone from Amazon, and it's a nice kit, but it took me 2 hours to figure out how to put it all together again because there isn't any instructions in the book. Well, that's a failure. It's just a failure because I almost gave up and sent it back, no matter how much I wanted to use it, because I was just so frustrated. So design, good design is paramount. And when you give good design, it's like Apple products. You use Apple. I use Apple. I love Apple. Why do we love Apple? Because the design is stunning, just stunning. And that's what I want software to be as well.
Oh, you make a very good point. I mean, you just can't beat Apple, right? They had the design. And it's not just for, well, the purpose of putting it out there. It really does have that family feel every time you use their products where, hey, this is being designed and best handcrafted by the best. You know, it's something about that culture that they developed and across the world. It's not even just in one area, across the world now, where people are just like, well, we have to use it. It's just something about that brand loyalty that brings them back for sure. And it's all down to the design part. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Looking at another thing you mentioned here in the forum, when the stars align, just the worldwide adoption of Nautilus FM, give me that alignment and when that vision happens and what it's going to be like when that day finally comes.
You know, that's a really good question, and I have absolutely no idea. I know that in the week since I released it, I've had download requests from 24 countries, which is pretty astounding. The majority of requests for it are coming from people who are intermediate developers who, you know, have been working with FileMaker for a while, but are not don't consider themselves to be experts. And 65 to 70% is in that area. And a lot of those are in-house developers, people working in organizations. And it was always my thought when I released Nautilus FM that the market that would like the area that would most likely adopt it would be the intermediate developers, and especially those who work for larger organizations where they're building solutions on a regular basis for different departments, but they don't have any consistency from one to the other, and every solution looks and works differently. So Joe in accounting develops a solution that does something, and Bill in marketing develops a solution to something else, but Joe can't look at Bill's and know exactly what he's doing and how it works without diving deeply into it, which can take a lot of time. Now, with Nautilus FM, every single solution can look and work exactly the same, and it's completely flexible and adaptable, so it can provide consistency and continuity across an entire organization. That's what I'm hoping that will happen.
Yeah, no, you make a good point, man. That's great that you've had that so many downloads in so many countries. It gives you input. And that, what's the customer experience been like for the people who have purchased this and have tried it out?
Well, first of all, there's no purchase. I'm giving it away.
Oh, but, okay.
So, and it's still early, but I've already had several people reach out and having an ongoing email correspondence backwards and forwards with suggestions and ideas and comments, which are all being implemented in the next release. And so it's like I've just literally pushed the snowball off the top of the mountain, and it's starting to gain momentum, but it's too early yet to really be able to know where it's going to end up. It's just out there now, and hopefully it'll get a big wide adoption. A lot of people will like it.
No, that's awesome, brother. No, it's I wish the best to you. I know just the way you manifested it and explained your design process and the process of just building it through this podcast has definitely opened my eyes of just what it takes to put into work for be a software engineer, a software developer compared to like a programmer. So I appreciate you opening my eyes. Let's end it on a couple things here. How did you get into chess? I know that's something we didn't talk about. What's the story about how you got back into chess and helped you through those downtimes?
Well, I played chess since I was 4 years old. My father taught me, and then he wouldn't play me after the age of six because I kept beating him. But I've always loved chess. I love the analytics of it, and I actually believe that chess is the most important game in the world, and every child should learn it because it teaches you things that you can't learn otherwise. It teaches you how to deal with adversity, how to respond to an attack, how to strategize, how to become tactical. So it teaches, there's a lot of life lessons in a game of chess. Now, for me, part of it is I like to play chess so that it frees my subconscious to think about something that I'm trying to get to work. And it's just a sort of a break. So it's both an enjoyable thing to do, and it also has the ability to let me focus on that and let my subconscious work on something else.
No, that's great, man. I think it's your way of relaxation and expanding your creativity, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, we'll end it right here, my man, on this last question. Looking at your quote, those who say it can't be done generally don't want to do it. Explain then how you're going to prove those doubters wrong in the future.
Well, by being able to do things they say can't be done, and that's one of the great things about FileMaker is you can always do it. Just a way of, you've just got to make the effort and take the time to figure out and try it and get it until you get it right. And a lot of people just say, oh, you can't do that, because they don't want to do it. They just don't want to do it. So their best excuse is, we can't do it, or it'll take too long. So that's where you go from there.
Absolutely, bro. That's a great thing. It's a great tool to have when you have that confidence and motivation to build things happen. But I want to say thank you to Michael Sharp for coming on the show. Mike, you want to just plug your social handle so people can find you, and we'll obviously include the FileMaker too, for sure.
Yeah, just go to nautilusfm.com. I don't use social media. I don't have the time for it. But my website, as I say, nautilusfm.com, has got lots of information, lots of videos, and it's got my phone number if you want to reach me. It's you can reach me through that or by email.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much for taking time out of the day. To the United Podcast Experience listeners, thank you guys for always making time for the undivided attention to these guests. Michael, my man, appreciate you, and we'll have a great talk later. Appreciate it.
Sounds great, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Yo, thank you for listening to the podcast. As always, we hope this episode was valuable. And for more awesome stories, please subscribe. If you have someone else in mind that should hear these episodes too, go ahead and share it. We dare you. Follow us on Instagram at The United Promotion. And for everything else, including show notes and more info on how to become a guest on our podcast, visit linktr.ee/theup. Have a great day.